The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! All right, welcome to the Thunderbolt for April 24th, 2020. I pulled some Thunderbolts out of the archives this week, and I decided to wax nostalgic, and I got some pieces that originally aired back in 2014 and 2015. So here we go. Hunter S. Thompson once said that when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. So considering the world situation, I think it's time for the Thunderbolt to turn pro. Welcome to Bubble World. The central philosophy behind the Thunderbolt's activism is that most people are good people who are guilty of nothing more than believing what they see on the media machine. And that even if a relatively small minority of them figured out what was really going on, then they would rise up in outrage and put a stop to it. So right after World War I, the machine spent spurious money on scientific studies on how to manipulate public perception. And they have been spending serious money ever since, implementing all the best practices that their studies revealed. Now this has resulted in the population of the United States being wrapped firmly within a bubble that has absolutely nothing to do with facts or reality or even sanity. I call this the Great American Bubble Machine. The Great American Bubble Machine has convinced most Americans that it is honorable to sit in an air-conditioned bunker in Nevada while you mass murder women and children with a drone. But that it is cowardly to voluntarily give your life on a certain death suicide mission, flying an airplane into a building, great American bubble machine has convinced most Americans that making rich people richer is good for everyone. This is in spite of the fact that history has proven over and over and over again that always, invariably, without fail, 100% of the time, making rich people richer not only helps absolutely no one but rich people, but always, invariably, without fail, 100% of the time, proves utterly disastrous, often fatally so, for everyone who is not a rich person. The great American bubble machine has convinced most Americans that it is perfectly acceptable for one man to own a measurable portion of the whole frigging planet, while a mentally ill person is left to live on the street or die in an alley. Until recently, the great American bubble machine had managed to convince most Americans that smoking a harmless medicinal herb was a dangerous enough activity to warrant locking people up for decades over it. Yet at the same time, it was perfectly acceptable to consume a drug that is thoroughly deadly, highly addictive, destroys lives, wrecks families, and is the leading cause of violence in our culture. It is responsible for a mass slaughter on our highways every year, and is directly responsible for tens of thousands of deaths every year. Well, personally, I think we would be much better off if we would start living in a reality-based world. You know, at first I hesitated to do this piece because I didn't want to burst anyone's bubble. You know, propaganda and police are far from the only public manipulations tools available to the one percenters. For many decades, foundations and philanthropic grants have also played a vital role in the one percenters' control and manipulation of public perception.
Where has it come?
In fact, I maintain that this is one of the most important and the least understood of all the tactics that they use to control us.
You cannot break my ribs are strong.
So I have mentioned several times in the past how just after World War I, the one percenters began spending big bucks on scientific studies on how to manipulate public perceptions.
Here we are, scattered on the wounded earth, blessed are the ones who blessed our hands as one. 'Cause here we are, scattered within our wounded selves. Bless this life of ours, take us to ourselves. Little way, 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 little way, way, little way, 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 little way.
Yes, using their money to manipulate the opposition is one of the results of these studies. These studies led to David Rockefeller founding the Council on Foreign Relations.
I would like to say you come, wait here for the coming of the sun. Bless this life of ours, take us to our Savior.
The CFR is the premier organization promoting the New World Order. The CFR supports evolution rather than revolution. What this means is that the instant any grassroots organization starts wielding influence, the 1%ers try to take over and co-opt it.
Where has it gone?
They form foundations to shower grant money upon them.
You're gonna fool them, I say.
They try to get their own people into the leadership positions.
You cannot break my ribs. My ribs are strong.
They also do this with NGOs.
You cannot break my ribs. My ribs are strong.
They do this so they can promote counter-establishment memes in order to marginalize anti-establishment memes. They promote reform rather than revolution. Thus, during the race riots of the 60s, the foundations very generously funded legalistic and reformist organizations such as the NAACP rather than the more effective but more radical organizations such as the Black Panthers. This way, rather than actually getting to the roots of racism, they could just allow a few blacks to rise within the system and thus make them part of the system rather than being forced to actually change the system. Thus, they neuter revolutionaries rather than allowing them to reproduce. And thus, you see a vile currency manipulator such as George Soros funding all kinds of worthy causes. Not because he cares about the causes, but just so he can control them and restrain them, lest they trot a path too revolutionary. Yes, the Rockefellers, the Fords, and the Carnegies. All of them not only participate in this co-optation of revolutionary and or social justice organizations, but they literally pioneered the field. They seek to professionalize social justice movements because then, as professionals, they gain status as part of the system. Rather than in opposition to the system, they're invited to conferences. They're invited to speak at events. They sometimes appear on the magic media. They are literally brought into the very heart of the very machine they were allegedly fighting. Now keep in mind, these same people fund Democracy Now. They fund Ralph Nader. Eventually, the leaders of these social justice organizations, even the good people who started off to do good things, often become trapped within this institutional meme. There are certain lines they no longer want to cross because that would endanger their new status. In addition, once they become dependent upon funding from a certain source, then the tendency to not bite the hand that is feeding them can become paramount. Now, since the policies of the 1% basically consist of raping the earth and the people who live there, then their policies tend to create massive social upheaval and warfare. Thus, the one percenters need all the public manipulation tools that they can get. Educating their lackeys properly is also another part of this plan. John D. Rockefeller founded the University of Chicago to create consensus amongst societal elites as to beliefs and ideologies, and also to train their upcoming lackeys in their newly pioneered methods of controlling the masses. Cornell and Vanderbilt universities were founded for the same reasons. Yes, these universities first institutionalized the social sciences, in particular, economics, politics, and sociology. They did this so they could subsequently institutionalize all of the intellectuals in order to draw them away from any radical ideologies they may otherwise be exposed to. This way, they could focus public attention upon the symptoms rather than upon the disease itself. Now, this is very important because the one percenters are themselves the disease itself, and thus the one percenters don't want us to actually fix the problem because that would mean seriously downgrading, if not completely eliminating, their privileged positions. Thus, they promote reform rather than revolution. They support supergluing the existing non-sustainable structure rather than tearing it down and building something better. And this is why all these famous foundations suddenly popped up in the early 20th century, seemingly doing all these wonderful philanthropic works. It was all done for PR and for purposes of manipulation and deflection. Make no mistake, kids. These foundations are the tools of control and domination. As for the NGOs, you may remember that the Christian missionary system was one of the vital tools of 19th and 20th century imperialism. Well, the NGOs have now taken over that role. They are there to preach the gospel of compassionate capitalism, even though there is no such thing. The individual people who make up those missions and who work for these NGOs are often the very best people with the very best of intentions. They enter the world of NGOs because they want to make change, but they consider politics to be too dirty. But they are actually there merely to mitigate the symptoms, not to cure the disease. One percenters know the true role of these NGOs, even if the employees and volunteers who actually do the work don't. They are there to relieve poverty. They are not there to ask why there is so much poverty. They are there to help refugees during war. They are not there to ask why there is so much war. They are there to report on poverty and injustice. They are not there to ask why there is so much inequality and injustice. They are there to treat the victims. They are not there to question the reason for their victimization. They are not to question the system that creates all this poverty, war, and injustice. And their actions actually strengthen the system because NGOs often pacify good people into thinking they are making things better when instead they are acting as enablers. And the fact that the 1% so cynically use so many truly good people to accomplish such incredibly vile ends is one of the many utterly contemptible attributes that the 1% displays. Now, this problem is further exacerbated by the fact that when the 1%ers fund social justice organizations, then they often insist upon line item control of their budgets. They often demand certain results. And since they tend to fund on a quarterly schedule, and since true change often takes generations, then they are not geared for long-term projects or goals. Thus, the social justice organizations spend all of their time on ineffective short-term fixes rather than doing long-range planning for true and effective change. And of course, the 1%ers also use these foundations to manipulate the opinions of the general public. One of the originals, the Rockefeller Foundation, was first formed as a direct result of the Ludlow Massacre, where Mr. Rockefeller paid National Guard troops to massacre a bunch of striking miners. And they ended up killing up a large number of their women and children as well. This resulted in a massive scandal. And thus, Mr. Rockefeller hired the very first PR man. His name was Ivy Lee. And Mr. Lee convinced the public that Mr. Rockefeller was actually a swell fellow after all. Suddenly, Mr. Rockefeller was all over the news for all of the charitable contributions he was making. He spent several times as much money advertising his contributions as he did actually contributing, but that fact was not mentioned. And it worked. Very quickly, Mr. Rockefeller was transformed in the public eye from a murderer of women and children into a philanthropic hero. And thus, the model grew. The foundations were soon forming think tanks, such as the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderberger Group. All of these groups were very lavishly funded. The Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Corporation also got together in 1924 and formed the Social Science Research Council. They did this to act as a secret conduit between the foundations and the universities so the public would not know that the foundations were actually the ones who were directing the course and curriculum of the social sciences education in the American universities.
What is that you say? You got a whistle in the wind. Yeah, go down, go down. Go down. Live here for me, now live here for you. Live here.
They must go to such extraordinary lengths because they absolutely do not want students to actually understand what is going on.
Blow down. Little chicken, the long, daddy, long legger, the bigger the dog, the baby with the cat and blue.
This is why the universities so severely compartmentalize education in the fields of sociology, economics, and politics. And never shall the fields meet. They do this even though all three fields are intimately intertwined, and you cannot truly understand any one without having at least a basic understanding of all three.
Yeah, what is that you say?
They separate these sciences,
get, yeah.
Because if students ever started learning about all three, and about how they all interact, then they would very quickly discern what an insane, unfair, and unsustainable scam it all is. These foundations have profoundly influenced every area of our society, from politics to education, to the environmental movement, to psychiatry. They decide what your child will learn in school. They will decide who will be the president of the United States. Their influence is, if anything, even more pervasive in the third world, where their money goes even further. They are ubiquitous, and they are pure frigging evil. We need to marginalize these people, and we can't beat them playing their game by their rules. Especially when they themselves are not subject to the rules. We cannot beat them in their rigged game by playing with their stacked deck. I am convinced, in fact, that what we need to do is to create our own system and then simply make their machine irrelevant. And now we are going to take a quick station break. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. So as far as dealing with the world goes, it's pretty much down to you and me. Well, except for the NSA and AT&T. Time to spread the news.
Carlos, I'm going to get on my feet out the line and spread this news around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got to do it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, according to documents released by our hero, Edward Snowden, AT&T is basically acting as a subsidiary of the NSA. Yeah, leaked government records laud AT&T's, quote, extreme willingness to help, unquote, the NSA to spy on us. Yes, kids, AT&T supplied access to billions of emails on our domestic networks. And they also provided technical aid in carrying out a secret order allowing the wiretapping of all internet communications at the headquarters of the United Nations, which happens to be a customer of AT&T. You may remember our president's claims at the time that the NSA was only collecting metadata. And even then, they were only collecting on calls and emails that were international. So you may or may not remember that at the time, I called our president a liar in the Thunderbolt. Well, I hate to shock you, but these new documents now prove that indeed every word Barack Obama said about them, collecting only our metadata and nothing else, was a total freaking lie.
Can't get no lower than that.
They are collecting everything, and they are collecting it both internationally and domestically.
Thinking about your hometown, ain't you?
Yes, I am, man. Feel good, too.
You know, it would be much more satisfying to be right all the time if the stuff that I was right about didn't always suck so much. So you may remember that Barack Obama and the Democrats in Congress later granted retroactive immunity from prosecution to AT&T for illegally spying on us. You may also remember that even later, at the Democratic National Convention in 2012, the delegates were first given plastic bags full of free swag, said bags featuring a large AT&T logo on the side. And you may remember that the biggest and most lavish party of the entire convention that year was sponsored by AT&T. Yes, AT&T loves the Democrats. It's a match made in that other place that isn't heaven. You may also remember that when the NSA spy scandal blew up, Barack Obama was right on it. He called a press conference wherein he explained that he was implementing reforms. Yes, never fear, white America. Our dear leader is taking decisive action. He has announced that the NSA will no longer be storing our private phone records. Wow, sigh of relief. Know those phone records? Well, now, he's stored by AT&T.
Yes, yes, yes.
Boy, what a relief. Now I can sleep at night again, knowing that. So who is that joke on? If you think electing a Republican or another Democrat is going to do any good, I maintain that our elections these days are not only completely useless as far as bringing change, but I am pretty sure that these days the machine is consciously using the elections themselves as yet another distraction.
Let's go together.
Note that in spite of the fact that everyone but complete idiots realizes that our electoral system is utterly corrupt from top to bottom, our country is still more election-obsessed than any other country in the world. Between the midterms and the full terms, we are pretty much in perpetual campaign mode anymore, and when we are in campaign mode, then the horse race and the associated sound bites get all the press while the real issues are ignored. As long as we're in campaign mode, the non-issues associated with the campaign circus distract everyone from the real issues that actually matter. As long as we have perpetual elections, then no one needs to actually govern. Yes, it is October 2nd, 2015, and this week the Thunderbolt is proud to officially announce that after decades of research into the foundational problems that lead to widespread poverty and after taking into account all of the financial, social, and political considerations that all interact with such complex and dynamic factors both historically and contemporarily, we have unleashed our powerful intellects upon the seemingly impenetrable web of confusion and chaos, and we have figured it out. And not only that, but I am now going to reveal the secret to you in an explosive Thunderbolt exclusive! Here's the plan. Simply make everyone in the world start giving me money. Because if everyone started giving me money, then I would very quickly have enough money for myself. And after that, I could start giving money to other people who need money. And then pretty soon, everyone in the world will have enough money. Go ahead and take a breath for a moment as you absorb the awesomeness of our pure genius. I sense a Nobel in this. Next, we have reason 428 of why everybody in the world should listen to the Thunderbolt. Everyone else in the world is wondering how our dear president can sign off on Arctic drilling one day and then fly to the North Slope of Alaska to bemoan climate change the next day. Our president has now even definitively proven his environmentalist cred by changing the name of our highest mountain, named after a late 19th century presidential imperialist fascist piece of shite, name to William McKinley. He changed the name from Mount McKinley to Mount Denali, which is the original Native American name. And that means something really cool, but I am forgetting exactly what right now, or even vaguely what. However, even if Thunderbolt listeners suffer from confusion over the meaning of the word Denali, you don't suffer any confusion whatsoever over the fact that what Mr. Obama says usually turns out to be the exact opposite of what he actually does. Thunderbolt listeners expect nothing less from our president. And for our next Thunderbolt, we have the next installment of a semi-regular Thunderbolt feature called Heartbreakers.
Remember when I caught your eye? You gave me rainbows and butterflies. We did enjoy a happiness. When our love was over, I was such a mess. I smiled at you and you smiled back. That's when I knew there's no turning back. You said you loved me and I did too. Although it's over, I still love you.
There are currently over 60 million refugees on our planet. That is an all-time high in recorded history. There are 8 million displaced Syrians alone, 4 million of whom have left Syria. The vast majority of these refugees have landed in third world countries that do not have the resources to take care of them.
I tried to fight it, I tried so hard, and every day I pray to God that you and me were meant to be. But you had another, you had another, and now it's gone. I don't know why, I feel like crying, just wanna die. I can't look at you, and you know why. Though I tried so hard to catch your eye.
Virtually all of these refugees lost their homes due to American foreign policy. As of April, Lebanon alone, with a total population of 4.5 million, has taken in nearly 2 million Syrian refugees. That is over 40% of their total population.
Right from the start, you're in my mind, you're in my heart. I wish I knew right from the start. All my friends said, you break my heart. A heartbreaker right from the start, you're in my
proportionally,
you're in my
this would be as if the United States had taken in over 160 million refugees. But that would still not be an equitable comparison, since the people of the United States has much more wealth per capita than the people of Lebanon do.
I knew right from the start, all my friends said, you break my heart.
However,
right from the start,
in spite of the fact that American foreign policy is responsible for virtually all of the many millions of refugees all over our planet, including all of those from Syria, the United States has taken in a grand total of 1,500 Syrian refugees. That's a joke, except it's not. And by the way, Israel, which borders Syria, has taken in exactly zero Syrian refugees. Meanwhile, American right-wingers' heads are exploding over 12 million undocumented immigrants in the United States. And I mentioned that Lebanon had taken in nearly half their population worth of Syrian refugees. In addition to that, and probably partly because of that, Lebanon is now in the middle of a political crisis. There's a major grassroots rebellion erupting that is centered around the government's failure to pick up the trash. Though the trash pickup has actually become a metaphorical symbol for overall government corruption and inefficiency. This movement is called You Stink, and it looks like it may be a BFD. Stay tuned to the Thunderbolt for further developments concerning You Stink. And for our next heartbreaker, we have New Orleans.
Rule number one.
Our dear leader went to New Orleans for the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. He lauded the amazing comeback that New Orleans has experienced.
Rule number two.
However,
just don't get attached to
the level of awesomeness that the great New Orleans comeback has attained is wholly dependent upon whom you ask. A large majority of local whites agree that the New Orleans comeback has been a success. On the other hand, a large majority of local blacks say it has been a complete disaster in addition to these disasters wrought by Hurricane Katrina.
At least I think I do.
Hurricane Katrina accomplished the first and most difficult process of gentrification. The storm effectively emptied New Orleans of poor people.
Rule number three.
Whereupon both the Bush and Obama administrations assisted the local power structure to take advantage of the destruction to conduct one of the most outrageous and thorough gentrification projects in American history. There were mega billions of dollars available for the New Orleans reconstruction.
This is how to be a heartbreaker.
And guess what color the people
danger
who got virtually all of that federal recovery money was?
Singing, how to be a heartbreaker.
On the other hand, over 100,000 New Orleanians have never been able to come home.
At least I think I do.
And guess what color virtually all of them were? They are making sure there is still enough affordable space for a select few black musicians so they can pretend New Orleans is still New Orleans. But New Orleans has been transformed from a gritty, dirty, but enchanting and thoroughly interesting place into what is reportedly a staged and managed playground for privileged white yuppies. Yep. Gentrification for the nation. Another note
boys, they like the look of danger
on Obama's touted New Orleans recovery.
Stranger.
In the great race to the bottom, New Orleans is second only to Atlanta for the honor of having the highest rate of wealth inequality in the United States. Mission accomplished.
At least I think I do.
Must be some kind of love-hate relationship going on there. So that's all I've got for news and commentary this week. And again, no activist events calendar. So again, I'm going to fill up the rest of the hour for everyone in both Seattle and Olympia with some music. And I think this week I'm going to go bizarre, crazy, and weird. This is Red Engel and his Natural 7.
Fire in the mountain, winds are blowing. We're going to war. Get it going.
You come along from out of nowhere. You took my heart and set her free. Wonderful schemes, wonderful dreams get nowhere. Every hour is sweeter than a flower to me. Scrim-a-rink-a-dink-a-pink, and that's why I keep a-thinking. If you go back off to nowhere, leaving me with a memory, dear, I'll stick it home, a-hoping and a-trusting that you'll come a-busting out of nowhere, toting along someone, someone to love for me. Now, a feller asked me the other day what I liked about that spot. So I got together some arguments to prove what it was we got. I phoned the president and the king of Norway and a little guy called Max. And man, they really told me off. So here's the facts. Ain't neither north, south, east, or west, but it's a place my mammy loved the best. The gravy there don't spill on your vest, and that's what I like about nowhere. So won't you come with me to old nowhere, where things are corny and the corn is hairy. We'll fry a fig and broil a berry, and that's what I like about nowhere. When you're living there, you're on cloud eight. You're solid Jackson, solid gate. Living, I reiterate, and that's what I like about nowhere. If you want a million, just write your check. And when you're in that railroad wreck, nobody takes that engine off your neck. That's what I like about nowhere. If you meet a babe that comes from there, you purr and smirr, have a love affair. You can't help it and she don't care, and that's what I like about nowhere. Did I tell you about your place called Did My Duty? It ain't no city, but it's a beauty, and that's where I met my sweet Patootie. I did my duty. Ain't got queens from New Orleans, lamb shanks or dandelion greens, but the gals never grew out of the teens, and that's what I like about nowhere. We ain't got a lot of things to boot, like that there vanilla and chocolate and tutti fruit, but we got Drooper Q Padroot.
Who's he?
Nobody who cares a hoot, and that's what I like about nowhere. We got no taxes, got no dough, ain't even got mother-in-laws. Ain't got alarm clocks, radio, it's a no-man's land of Oz. No liquid sunshine, legal hogwash, ain't got nothing like that.
Man, you name it, and if we ain't got it, we won't get it.
That's what I like about nowhere. That's what I like about nowhere.
Ah, you can prove that you're a mouse by eating cheese beneath the house.
So ride 'em, cowboy, ride that pony nowhere.
You come to me and you got nowhere, trying to bring your love to me.
Over, shut it down. I'm hunting for someone, y'all. He's a lion thieving rattlesnake, and he's broken every law. He's terrorized the lives of men, and he's under arrest because I've been sent with a warrant from the body of Christ.
What's happening? Why is there?
Satan, bite the dust. One of you unclean spirits, I'm running you out of town. Depression, strife, disease, and fear, your posse's going down.
Oh, last dinner for the dog, Batman. We sent him over the box.
But I know who I am through Jesus Christ, so I talk to you demons like dogs. Satan, you coward, you molester of souls, I command you to appear. You're hiding from the presence of God, but I can feel your fear from here.
You rattle my keyboard long enough, you got something in your craw.
A praying church wants you to know.
Know what?
Your kingdom's gonna fall.
There's gonna be trouble here tonight.
Cause I represent a whole new breed of Christian of today. And I'm authorized and deputized to blow you clean away. A message to deliver from one who's true and just. We'll spit in your eye, you father of lies, and Satan, bite the dust. take you on, but take you out by the Spirit and the Word. One by one you'll drop like flies underfoot and in the ground, because greater is he who is in me than the snake I'm staring down. You demon of alcoholism, you'll be the first to go. There's deliverance from you through Jesus Christ, so hit the road. You spirit of infirmity, you ain't welcome here no more. We lay hands on the sick and they recover, so out the door. You demon of false religion, you've preyed on minds so simple. I bind the spirit of your song, so now come on! Play that in your temple. Now Satan, you're next in line. I'm gonna hit you where it hurts, cause I'm tired of you and my family, and I'm tired of you and my church. I'm not my own, I'm bought with a price. I'm a Holy Ghost filled man, and I'm tolling the bell of your eternal destruction across the land, cause I represent the whole new breed of Christian of today. And I'm authorized and deputized to blow you clean away. I've got a weapon with two bullets that overcome all sin and crud. One bullet is called the word of my testimony, and the other one's called the blood. Satan, bite the dust. Bite the dust. Well, how do you feel about that, devil?
I'm a feeling mighty low.
Good.
Away. That was Carman, C-A-R-M-A-N, with Satan Bite the Dust. And before that, we had Red Ingle and his Natural 7, Going Nowhere. And that's it for this week's show. I hope you have as much fun listening as I do making them. And I hope to see you next week. Peace. Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt, nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to Dana 98501@gmail.com, and we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And please note that the Thunderbolt is on Facebook, where you can find links to the show and to the show notes. Or you can now go directly to the Thunderbolt WordPress site, which is at dana98501.wordpress.com.
Thank you very much.